Good evening and welcome to East End Inc. Tonight we present writers and longtime friends Diane Glancy and Spencer Reese, as recorded by Canio's Cultural Cafe in December of 2020 at a Zoom event. They were introduced by Canio's Marianne Calendrill.
Diane Glancy is a poet, a novelist, essayist, playwright, and professor emeritus at McAllister College. Her works have won the Pablo Neruda Prize for Poetry, the R.L. Gibson Lifetime Achievement Award from the Oklahoma Center for the Book, a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Native Writers Circle of the Americas, among many other awards. In 2018, Publishers Weekly named her book, Pushing the Bear, a novel of the Trail of Tears, as one of 10 essential Native American novels. Diane's book combines the Book of Job with the history of the Native American peoples in North America. Spencer Reese is a poet and an Episcopal priest. His first collection of poems, The Clerk's Tale, won the Bakeless Prize in 2003. He has received an NEA grant, a Guggenheim, a Whiting Writers Award, and the Amy Lowell Traveling Scholarship, among other awards. His poems have been published in the New Yorker magazine, in Poetry, The American Scholar, and The New Republic.
I want to begin by reading just a few passages from Island of the Innocent, and then Spencer and I will talk. I've always loved the Book of Job in the Old Testament, and I wanted to contemporize it. So I doubt that Job had a canoe in those days, but he does in the opening poem. May lit the sky. Job's canoes unfastened, hayrolls unrolled, Sabaeans, three bands of Chaldeans, fire and whirlwind, take seven sons and three daughters, the flocks and herds, 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 asses, 500 yoke of oxen. Three friends and a fourth come from their own places to talk about the reasons for suffering, blaming Job of wrongdoing, but as it turns out, is a trial from God, the lovely one, who taunts Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job?" Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves to the Lord. This is interesting enough. And I go on and write more about Job. And then in the writing, the voices of Native history began to intrude. And I kept thinking, can I do this? And I went ahead and added it. One of the first passages is about the little bighorn in which General George Custer was defeated, murdered actually, in 1876. And this is a very small portion. Chief Gull recounts the hill where it happened. If I could have one dance, it would be that one, enough to hold me through the winters that followed. It was the dark ages after that. Buffalo gone, our will to thrive. We never won another battle. The winds that followed blew us into little cutout houses, fold back doors, plastic buffalo, cowboys still after. I wanted to put the Book of Job also in a nutshell. A man who suffered loss, which uncovered a flaw in his character, which he acknowledged and corrected, and all was restored. So instead of 7,000 sheep, they had 14,000 sheep, of which his wife asked, "What are we going to do with them?" This poem is called There Was in Uz. And it's a cento from chapters 29 and 30. A cento is when you take words already written and place them on your page. It's an easy way to write. And this is Job's voice. I delivered the poor that cried, and the fatherless, and him that had none to help. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was father to the poor. The cause I knew not, I searched out. My root was spread by the water. The dew lay all night upon my branch. Men kept silent at my counsel. Their tongue cleaved to the roof of their mouth. Justice was my robe. I broke the jaws of the wicked and plucked the prey from their teeth. Now they hold me in derision, whose fathers I would have disdained to set with my dogs. They were driven from among men to dwell in cliffs, in caves, and rocks. They cut up mallows and juniper roots for their meat. Among the bushes they brayed, and under nettles they gathered. They were children of fools, children of base men. They were viler than the earth. The footnote after this poem says, yikes. There it is. Unlike the impenetrable Leviathan, Job is descaled. He thought himself a righteous man, yet his trials uncovered his shortcomings in his snippish and arrogant attitude, which he repented of. He said later, I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. I also found my own voice. I drove to Nebraska, I drove to Pittsburgh, and my own voice intruded also. And I gave myself permission, because the book of Job actually has 12 voices in it: God, Satan, Job, Job's wife, the four messengers who came to say all is lost, and then Job's three friends, and there was a fourth one, Elihu, that came after. As if three wasn't enough, another one showed up. So during the years that I was writing this book, I was also tracing my family history. And this is one short paragraph. It's called Jumpsuit. This is what it was after not knowing, but hearing fragments of what happened and versions and reversions of those fragments. I looked for her grave, piecing together family history, driving from Kansas to Moffat, Oklahoma, on the Fort Smith, Arkansas border by the Arkansas River, out in the country where dirt roads send a trail of dust. Arvazina Crawford Lewis, my great-great-grandmother, born in Tennessee. She went to Candy's Creek Mission School, established for Cherokee children by Dr. Samuel Worcester, a missionary to the Cherokee. She was there, my great-great-grandmother, with her spelling book and pencil, in her chair at a table, writing letters of the alphabet that made words from her spelling book. Her mother, Mary Waters Crawford, her grandfather, Michael Waters, on the 1835 Cherokee census. And it goes on about how I got lost and et cetera. But that's just an example of the composite that this book is, this strange book. It's been called strange.
You're listening to East End Inc. We're hearing writers Diane Glancy and Spencer Reese as recorded by Canio's Cultural Cafe in December of 2020.
For 40 years, Diane Glancy has been splicing and rearranging meanings and identities with her poems. She's less quick change artist than a slow evolving shape shifter. With these poems and hybrid essays, she's once again drawn the reader into her unusual mind, opening up her Bible while examining an Indian doll in a museum taken from a battlefield in western Nebraska after the massacre at Ash Hollow. Some of these poems are just so moving, it makes me weep. Because of the accrued history of European colonization, enslavement, exploitation, and forced conversions in the New World, Christianity and the Native American are rarely found harmoniously in the same sentence, let alone the same poem. If they are, you'd likely find the white space filling up with enough irony to push the poem off the page. Yet Diane Glancy's sensibility, being both Christian and a life member of the first families of the Cherokee Nation, makes her sui generis, allowing her to explore and write about two subjects until they sing, where another writer might quickly become tone deaf to the subtleties. So I'm deeply fascinated by indigenous writers, by the Native American history in the United States. Did you read David Truer's, I don't know if that's how you pronounce his last name,
but sure.
Called The Beating Heart of Wounded Knee, that was up for the National Book? Mm-hmm. Did you? It was a really interesting book, and there were, you know, so many things in there, injustices that I had no idea about. I mean, there are so many injustices, as we're experienced with, you know, as Job experienced in his, you know, that story is like, how many more injustices can a person possibly take? And one could say the same about Native American people and what they've been through. I read that Frank Baum, the guy that wrote The Wizard of Oz, you know, wrote this horrible thing about Native Americans. I couldn't believe it. You know, the guy that wrote The Wizard of Oz. So how do you make sense of that as an American, as somebody who carries all that inside of you? Or is the only way to just sort of, you know, in this book, it's sort of like you're not answering things. You're knitting it all together, and we're left to...
Right. The narrative is there. There has actually been nothing but injustice. Although in my research, there were one or two boarding schools where the Indian children came from dysfunctional families and starvations, and they found a home and a bed and something to eat. But mainly it was the ripping off of language and culture. And we don't do well when we are without that. And it's led to much abuse and alcoholism and drug use and purposelessness and things like that. So I think we're still at the point of getting the story out, of narrating it. That has been my work for years, is these first person narratives of what it was like to be Sacagawea traveling with Lewis and Clark, or the Cherokee on the Trail of Tears, or Kateri Tekakwitha, who lived through the smallpox epidemic and was converted by the Mohawks, by the Jesuits in the 17th century. And so to find a bright story, it's like Job in the middle of his trials. There was really no hope. And then you have these people come and say, what's wrong with you, Job? What have you done wrong? And so the natives have also taken a lot of blame for the difficulties in recreating their lives, recreating culture. It's not easy to do at all. And you get a lot of bitterness. I've been to many conferences over the years where I could hear the anger in the throats of those on the panel who had been to boarding schools or whose fathers had been to boarding schools. And I'm sitting here, a Christian, you know, it didn't go over very well. And they have said to me, you can't be a Christian and a Native American, but that's not true. You can. But I don't know, you're still in the swamp. You're still in the middle of the book of Job, where these sufferings just do not go away. They seem to be passed down in the DNA from generation to generation. So how do you handle it? You either join the center of Native American resistance, nativism, which I have not. I would rather sit in my study and write and be a Christian and go to church. So that we are now finding out, and the reclamation of Native language and culture. So it's just going many different ways. I can read what I was going to read at the end, how the positivity of Native culture. Every January, I drive to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and teach in the low residency MFA program at Carlow University. And 2 years ago, when I came back from Pittsburgh, I got caught in a terrible blizzard, and I just kept going because the ancient ones were there with me. This takes about 2 minutes to read. Travel from Pittsburgh. Writing the versions, a recurrence of variation. And it has an epigraph. Living as we do in a broken world, essays are bound to become more broken and fragmented. Hilton Ahl's Introduction, The Best American Essays, 2018. January 11th to the 12th, 2019, in a Midwest snowstorm, I drove 840 miles from Pittsburgh to Kansas City in 17 hours. East of Effingham, Illinois, I saw a haze that was the beginning of the snow. It continued to snow until I reached my house in Kansas. I don't often drive that long at one time, but it was too hard to get off the road. I stopped for gas up snow-packed exit ramps, and that was it. 40 miles an hour for the last 250 miles across Missouri St. Louis west to Kansas City. I couldn't see the line on the highway because the road was covered with snow, but the warning grooves at the side of the road growled if I got on them. I felt I was driving in the sky. There were times I felt my car leave the road where another world moved. Turning ahead a couple of pages. The old ones traveled with me. The old ones traveled with the car. I followed them through the snow. I knew they were with me. They were the car, the snow, the way through the snow. I heard their old stories in the voice of the snow. The brokenness held together with stories. The storm was an old being. Many had walked in it. The cold is a predator. It stalks its prey, biting first the toes, the fingers, then working its way to the heart. The car is a hunter. The car is a spirit. I am the car that continues on the road. It was the old ones pulling me through the night. The car is an island in a white sea. The car is an old migration trail. It is a sledge, not a hammer, but a sleigh or sled moving through the snow. How often words are at war with themselves, carrying meanings that have nothing to do with one another. How often the car leaves the road and connects with old journeys. How often one meaning becomes many. And it goes on for a couple of pages, but that is enough. Now, wait a minute. I passed a very important subject. Oh, yes. Bitterness and anger, that suffering also can suffer, is like the cold. It stalks its prey. It stalks the one who harbors it in their heart, biting first the toes and then the fingers and working its way to the heart. I was really talking about the Native American here, not just the cold outside. So you have a choice. You can either be very bitter about the past. And I am not in tribal life either. My father left and went to the stockyards in Kansas City before the Depression. So I did not grow up in tribal community. So I'm outside of that. And so I don't have that sharp bitterness that many people do growing up in the poverty of a reservation.
You're listening to East End Inc. We're hearing writers Diane Glancy and Spencer Reese as recorded by Canio's Cultural Cafe in December of 2020.
I was asked to do two readings. It was the day, it was the week that George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis, which is the town where I was raised and where Diane taught. And I was so disturbed by those events that for the first time in my life, I canceled doing events. And it's a time. Where I hope that we can learn from these things and be together. So this is a poem about a farm. It's short, where Diane went and met my parents on this farm. The farm was surrounded by burial mounds. And it's called Midnight, and I lived there for about 3 years. And I think I was meant to read it tonight. This is from a book called The Clerk's Tale. The book was rejected 300 times over 15 years and was finally accepted by Louise Glick in 2003. I could not believe it because I had been rejected so much. That I just, you know, I just thought, well, that's just the way it's going to, I was actually going to give up when I sent it to in for the contest with Louise. But prior to that, maybe it was 10 years before, I had gone to McAllister College and met with Diane, and I was probably slightly forlorn, and I was working at Brooks Brothers at the time, and she prayed over this book. And I will never forget that. It was the two of us in her office, and she was serious about it. And I cannot tell you the amount of people that have loved and supported me to get where I am today. I am the amalgam and product of a lot of love. And although I have had suffering, I want to go with hope and positivity and expansion. I think for a long time, I myself felt like a bit of a victim, and that does not intrigue me or interest me anymore. So it begins with a quote from E.M. Forrester, which is, "I quite expect to end my life caring most for a place." It's just a description of this place, this the beautiful country of Minnesota. Pine trees stir in a chorus of darkness. The lake taps the shore as if to tell me something. A light rain increases the abstractions. All edges blur. Dark tilled fields stretch for miles. The Midwest settles into my chest. Colts bolt across untouched Dakota acres, alive with the cymbal smash of affectionate caresses. Farms, barns, somnolent cows, empty gravel roads, and distant houses make up the landscape I walk in, where once, a long time ago, Indians slept and walked, dissolving into the shadows with tenderness. On Andy Cleland's farm, the one closest to the lake, where cattails flourish at the water's edge, there is one huge hill, vacant of shrubbery. I was told once it was an Indian burial mound, and that was why no tree or bush would grow on that hill. All these years later, and the hill is still bald, whispering softly as the revolutions of the sea, echoing with the mouths of the vanquished. Sheep maraud across the hill's back, exhilarated by the dirt smells born again by spring. The wind haunted with the songs of comrades now gone. The rest of this panorama is immense, dark, impenetrable, unstructured. But if you look closely in the left-hand corner, I can just be distinguished from the blue, blue brilliance of all this land. A tiny figure, no bigger than a grass blade, a shadow hugged by shadows, heading home after a long walk nowhere, encircled by a halo of rocks, trees, crops, rivers, clouds, by every blessed thing conspiring together to save my life.
You've been listening to East End Inc. We heard poet and novelist Diane Glancy and poet Spencer Reese, recorded by Canio's Cultural Cafe via Zoom in December of 2020. Diane Glancy is a professor of English at McAllister College in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Her Pushing the Bear, a novel of the Trail of Tears, was published in 1998 by Mariner Books. And the sequel, Pushing the Bear, after the Trail of Tears, tells the story of the Cherokees' resettlement in the hard years following removal. It was published in 2009 by University of Oklahoma Press. Spencer Reese was born in 1963 in Hartford, Connecticut. His poems have appeared in The New Yorker and in many literary journals. His collection, The Clerk's Tale, was published in 2004 by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Upcoming literary events produced by Canio's Cultural Cafe include science writer Erica Serino in discussion of her new book, Thicker Than Water, The Quest for Solutions to the Plastic Crisis. That'll be Friday, November 5th at 7 p.m. via Zoom. More events are online at the calendar of events at the website canios.wordpress.com. www.poetryworkshop.com. The weekly poetry workshop meets Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. at the Long Island Poetry and Literature Repository, which is located at 1650 Sycamore Avenue in Bohemia, New York. And you can get more information by calling 631-413-7702. 631-413-7702. East End Inc. is heard on the fourth and occasional fifth Wednesday at this time. The programs are archived at eastendinc.blogspot.com, and the podcasts are at soundcloud.com. Simply search for East End Inc. East End Inc. is produced by Tony Ernst with the help of Marianne Calendrill and Catherine Sogan.